Hello and welcome to the Sports Champions podcast. Today I am joined with boxer and former Commonwealth champion, Stephen Swifty Smith.
Okay, mate.
Yeah, I'm all right. So I'm going to jump into this really quickly, actually, because I've got a few questions. You come from a family of boxers. Did that affect sort of training and stuff like through the years and whatnot? How did that affect, you know, was there a lot of competition between you?
Never affected it. It sort of helped it. It made it easier. You know, we trained a lot. The majority of our career, we trained out of a gym in Bolton. So, you know, we were travelling together all the time, and it was just sort of less driving shared between 4 years than there is obviously on your own travelling there every day. So
yeah,
it helped if anything else, and everything you were going through every time you were dieting and making weight and stuff. I always had my brothers doing it with me, so it was probably helped and made it a lot easier.
Yeah. Did you ever like fight against them or anything?
Yeah, we all sparred together, you know, throughout our careers at some point. But Paul and Callum professionally were the same weight, and Liam was only 2 weights below. So the other three sparred together a lot more than what I did.
Did it change sort of? You mentioned Liam was like below your weight class. Did his like training differ from yours because of that, or?
The training was always very similar, but I'd say for Paul and Callum being heavier, they probably done more strength work than I done. I didn't really do much strength work. Mine was sort of more conditioning and probably a little bit more high pace because you throw more shots being lighter, but obviously heavier, it's a lot more power based.
Yeah. So how would you sort of explain your siblings' fighting styles? How would they differ to you?
Good question. Paul's the biggest puncher. Paul can punch really, really hard, but he's different to me, where I'm probably lighter on my feet, a lot quicker. You know, I prefer my boxing brain and my hand speed. Then you've got Liam. I think Liam's like technical ability. Liam's just does everything technically correct. His variety and his punching is unbelievable. You know, you don't know what shot's coming next. And I think Callum probably is like a combination of us all. He can punch like Paul. He's got a good boxing brain like me, and he's got good variety and good technique like Liam. I think Callum sort of learns off all our mistakes, and he's probably more the complete package out of a lot of us.
So do you think that gave him sort of like an advantage from an early age that he had that, or?
Yeah, I think it can only help. I think if he's got three brothers all boxing before him, all at a good level, you know, we're all four for world titles and stuff, so
yeah.
It's always been a high level, and I think because we're so close, you sort of go through it all together anyway. Like when one of my brothers fight, I get more nervous than if I'm fighting myself. So I think going through that and seeing sort of his brothers lose and stuff like what's happened in our careers, good and bad, he's learned from everything, and he's took all the lessons on board, and it's made him a more complete fighter.
Did you ever sort of think that you'd all get to the same, you know, like level that you get to this point, or?
I don't know whether I thought we'd all get to sort of the same level, but I've always had confidence and belief in myself, obviously, and then I've always believed in my brothers. I've always thought every one of them can fight, and they're all good fighters. I didn't ever think there was like a, you know, a fake out of us where someone was sort of, you know, biding his time type of thing to move on. I think it was always sort of, it's always been our life, and it's always something we've done 100%, so... So yeah, I've always had belief they could all go all the way, but just how far it was up to themselves.
Did you ever sort of like watch a lot of their fights?
Yeah, I've never missed a fight. We're always together. Every time I see one of us fighting, the brothers are always there. You know, whether it be, you know, we fought all over America. We've all, I think me and Liam have fought in Vegas, Callum and Paul in like California. Yeah, I fought in like Foxwoods. We fought all over America and stuff, and you know, always all being there, and it's just one of them. Whenever we fight, we'll all be together.
Yeah. So did that sort of, you were with family sort of touring, I'd imagine, sort of like, was it sort of like a tour when you fought, or did you like sort of fight once and then come back?
It's sort of always been, you know, we're based in the gym, we do all our training here, and then we'll travel out for the fight together as a team. We'll go out for like fight week.
Yeah.
spend the week together, do the fight, travel on the next day, and then go again.
So I'd imagine you'll provide a lot of support for each other.
Yeah, definitely. Our biggest supporters, you know, my dad's always there. My dad's got four sons, all professional boxers, so he's here there and everywhere. But, you know, our biggest supporters is ourselves, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like quite a good environment to be in, sort of like, you know, going around with you're with family, so it's not like there's not that disconnect, really. You've grown up together, you know what you're all like and stuff
. I think it helps because we are so close. I mean, everyone who knows us knows how close we are. We speak to each other every day, and I think it helps me, you know, if for example, if you're a professional boxer and you know, none of your family do it, none of your family really understand it as much as mine do. And then, you know, if you go home and you know, you're cutting weight, you can't eat nothing. And then it's hard for some other people to get and understand, whereas my brothers do the same thing and know exactly what I'm going through. And, you know, when to give me space, when to get their arm around me. And it's good having people there that completely understand.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good sort of environment to be in. Do you think that if it were any different that you'd have gotten, you know, that you'd have had a harder time getting to where you are now?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I'd have done half as well if I didn't have my brothers, no. And I think the same for the three of them. I think we'd all tell you the same thing. You know, anything's harder on your own than it is with your brothers, obviously. And I think just having that understanding and having people around us, it definitely helped.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like maybe one of them got more, you know, one of you got more attention than like the other and stuff like that? Or was it, you know, like coming home and stuff like that from fights?
No, not really. I think, funnily enough, growing up, I think we all sort of give more accolades to Callum being the youngest one. So like anyone used to always say, who's the best? You know, we never compare each other. So we used to always just say, oh, Callum, because he's youngest. And then, the way it went round, you know, swings around, but it ends up now where, you know, as we got older, I would say Callum is genuinely the best. So it's one of them where it was a laughing joke. We'd always just say, oh, Callum, because he's the baby.
Yeah.
When he probably, at the time, maybe wasn't. But then as he's got older, he's learned his lessons. He's bided his time, he's corrected everything, he's a perfectionist. And I think then, well, up until last year, he was number one in the world, super middleweight, and rightly so, was the best, I think.
Yeah, it's quite confusing, sort of, a lot of the weight classes, because there's an array of different weights. What sort of, do you think that maybe a featherweight such as yourself would be able to beat a middleweight, or do you reckon that the weight sort of translates into raw power, or could you punch above that?
It's the weight are there for a reason. Do you know what I mean? You can't give too much weight away. Not in boxing. It's, you know, yeah, there's reduced weight categories in MMA, but it's also, it's a different game. It's different head trauma. It's different. You know, in boxing, you're getting punched. You know what I mean? I'm not. It's like an MMA, it's a good game, it's a different skill set, it's a completely different game, but, you know, there's ways and means of getting close and sort of, like, you know, having a wrestler, a good small man can get inside and grab them and do whatever moves, whatever skill set you've got on the ground, and it's sort of different in boxing. You can't give too much size away, and the saying goes, a good big man will always beat a good little man, and that's a big boxing term because, in general, you know, you can't really give too much weight away. So, back to your question, I don't think there's a featherweight on the planet who beat a good middleweight.
Yeah. So, what do you sort of do to get up to that? You know, is it a lot the same as what people do, you know, at home? Sort of, they could, like, to put weight on, you know, sort of traditionally, like, bulking up and stuff like that?
No, in boxing, it's always cutting weight. It's always coming down to your weight because, you know, you want every advantage you can get. So, people cut too much weight sometimes and ends up being weak, where they're trying to be big as they can for the weight, and it's getting that right judgment. That's where now nutritionists are all in play now, where everyone will use a good nutritionist, you know, who will help them get to their optimal weight. And sometimes, you know, you'll find people are big for the weight. You know, Callum's a super middleweight, he's 6'4", he's, you know, Paul's only 5'11", the same super middleweight, but just different bodies, different, like, you know, the way you can have a tall, thin person, you can have a short, muscly fella, whereas they'd be the same weight. I think it dieting and your nutrition helps to for your size and at the weight.
Yeah. So do you think that that's the most important thing in like training and conditioning for boxing? Or?
Yeah, of course. If you haven't done a good camp, you'll get found out. 12 rounds is a long time, and you've got to have got your camp right to do 12 rounds at a good pace. And if you haven't, then you'll get exposed.
Is that the most difficult part of training too?
It's different, you know. All training's tough. I mean, I found track running really hard. I think, yeah, you know, that was the ones that made me feel sick at the end of it. But you know, it's different. Some people don't like sparring. It's as real as you can get to fighting. But it's just one of them. I think all round, generally, I enjoy the training. I enjoy the camps. Yeah. I enjoy the mental battle that you have, you know, over and over again throughout your camp. And you know, if you get it right, it's put you in good stead for your fight.
Yeah, I think the stamina is like really, really impressive with boxers and stuff like that. Being able to get through so many rounds, being battered really, even sometimes, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of brutality in it, really. Is there like a point where you thought that someone was just ruthless or like relentless in the ring, or?
No, I've always had different obstacles, obviously, in my fights, but I think there's been times when you get in and you think maybe like you shock yourself, surprise yourself, where you're thinking, well, I'm tired, and you're looking at 28 round 3 and you're thinking, why am I tired? Do you know what I mean? You start panicking. That happens, and it's just sort of you know mental toughness, where you've got to get yourself through it and you've got to pull through. But there's been times when fights when I sort of haven't expected a kid to be able to punch and he's hit me and I've thought, wow, like he can punch. And you know, there's times when you get in sort of knowing a kid can punch and you're sort of waiting for him to hit you, and then he lands and you think, oh yeah, like he can punch. So yeah. It's just one of them. You just sort of have to, you get in and you've got to, you know, apply your own game plan and get in there with your skill set and try and come out on top.
Is that sort of like, what sort of plans do you have? Do you stage a fight, if that makes sense? Like, do you plan out how you're going to go at someone, like in the ring usually, or?
Yeah, you know, we leave a lot of that down to your trainer. I think your trainer does that. Your trainer comes up with your game plan. Your trainer will be watching your opponent, you know, religiously, and he'll say, look, every time he does this, he drops this hand. Every time, you know, he does this, he moves this way. And he'll come up with the game plan, how best to beat your opponent. And then, you know, you spend 12 weeks in the gym, you're constantly going over it, you're getting sparring partners in who are similar to him, who do the same things as he does. And then, so you're working on your game plan all the time, and then obviously it's up to you then to implement it on the night.
Yeah. Is it particularly important to know how your opponent fights, or?
Yeah, you know, some people don't like watching their opponent, some people do. I think it can't do you any harm. I mean, if you're going in, you know, what harm can it do going knowing what you're going up against, you know, rather than going in blind? I just think it's one of them. It works differently for different people, but I don't think it can ever do you any harm watching them.
Yeah, just to know how they fight.
Yeah, just to know what to expect.
Do you think it helps to watch people that, you know, some of the greats? Do you think it's best? Because everyone fights differently. There's a lot of different styles and things like that. You know, some people can tank a lot. Some people have got a lot of stamina. They're very, you know, quick on their feet and stuff like that. Do you think it's beneficial to watch people that are different to you, or, you know, sort of on that big world stage, or?
Yeah, I think you can always learn. I think watching other people does benefit you in terms of, you know, in boxing, watching all the greats, you'll always learn things. You'll see how he throws a certain shot,
yeah,
how he evades certain punches, and yeah, definitely, it's you can never stop learning. That's the one thing about the sport. Every fight's different, and you know, every boxer is different, and you can always learn from every different style. So,
yeah,
you know, you'll never go wrong in watching the best.
Is there anything that you've ever like sort of realised when fighting, or like when you've been watching someone and then you've implemented it?
A few things. I've always sort of like, I always go back to Sugar Ray Leonard. I think when I watched him, and he was probably the best ever in my opinion. And I think things he'd done, and there was fights when sort of, you know, it wasn't going well for him against Tommy Ahearns, who was another great, and you know, he got a bit of a telling off in the corner, and then he went out,
yeah,
and went right through the gears, and it was like round 13, knowing it's more than we even do now. It was right deep in a fight, and he goes out and just goes right through the gears, and he's throwing like 50 to 100 punches, like, non-stop, and you're thinking, wow, if he can just go to the well like that and pull out that in like that late in a fight against a great fighter,
yeah,
it shows, you know, you've always got reserves, you can always dig in and you can come out on top even when it's not going well for you. And again, he was another one who went through the weights and won world titles and done everything. And the way he sort of, he boxed and just used the skill set, just like he used to use his legs and stuff. He wasn't going out and just slugging all the time, but he showed against the likes of Haynes that he can fight when he has to. And yeah, I think that's the best way to go about boxing. You know, use your skills, box when you can box, and then fight when you have to. And I think that'll give you more longevity in your career.
That's a good way of looking at it, I think. It is a lot about sort of stamina, isn't it? It's like what I've realised. Do you think that a lot of it comes down to, because it's not all sparring when you're training. No. There's a lot of it come down to that sort of like cardio and that, like, just conditioning your body.
Yeah, you've got to be well conditioned. I don't think there's no one in the world who'll just get in the ring and do 12 rounds, you know, without the preparation. You've got to condition your body, and you know, your conditioning is a massive part, but it's also, you know, your mental abilities come into it. If there's, you know, there's many people I could tell you have got in the ring and they bottled it with, you know, for want of a better word. And if you're not mentally prepared, you won't win. If you're not physically prepared, you won't win. It's the combination. You've got to have the all round like package to go in there and succeed over that amount of time.
Yeah, definitely. Do you sort of, like, you mentioned the mental side of it. Do you ever find that you're nervous before a fight?
You get nervous before every fight. It's the unknown. You know, you can have the best camp. You can, you know, believe you're a lot better than your opponent, but you can get in and get caught one shot and get knocked out. So it can still happen. So obviously you're always gonna go in there. But, and you know, you've got to remember, as much as people never mention it, you're relying on luck a lot of the time. Mm. You know, as things happen in boxing. You know, you could get in round one, a kid swings a punch, you lay back off it, and his elbow catches you, splits your eye open, the fight's called off. You know, it's just bad luck. Things do happen where you need luck on your side, obviously, in everything, in every walk of life. But
yeah,
as long as you're mentally prepared and physically prepared, then you give yourself the best chance.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with boxing, but between rounds, you know, when you're sort of in that corner getting pepped up and stuff like that by your coach, what goes through your head when you're, you know, sat there maybe sipping on like water or something like that, you know? What is going through your head? Are you thinking of how you're going to hit back, or?
It depends how the fight's going. If the fight's going well, you can, you're relaxed, and you just get your breath back and you listen to what your coach is telling you, because your coach is watching the rounds and sees things your opponent's doing wrong or sees things that he can adjust in your game. So you do sit and you try your best to listen, but if the fight's going well, as I say, you're relaxed and you're just listening. If it's when it's not going well, you start thinking to yourself, you know, why is it not working, what's not working? And it's hard to listen sometimes when your mind's racing. Mm. Like, why is this not going how I visioned it? You know, why isn't he throwing that shot we've been working on? And you start, like, thinking things. You've got to just try and keep a clear mind. Let your coach have his 1 minute to speak to you and try your best to take it on board, and then it's up to you how you go and implement it.
Mm. So what is the worst thing that can happen in a ring, you know, like, in your opinion? Is it getting knocked out, or is it a certain...
Yeah, getting, like, for every boxer, it'll tell you the same thing. You know, getting knocked out is the worst thing. Well, up until recently, the worst thing that can happen in boxing is losing, and losing by knockout is the worst. But but recently and of late, now every boxer will tell you it's more of a worry getting a bad knockout because of, you know, these phones and social media and that nowadays. It's more nerve-wracking and worrying about something bad happening, because you know it'll be worldwide within 10 minutes, because the way social media is, the way these memes are, and the way like the internet is nowadays, I think it's a little bit fearful of that, and that shouldn't be happening. It's wrong, but that's just the way the world is now. If you was to go in and get a bad knockout where you proper fall and flatten your back, and it's a highlight reel knockout, that'll be around the world in the next 10 minutes, and that's a scary thought. You know, for people with kids and stuff like that, it's not nice.
Yeah. Did you ever have anything like that went viral, just sort of instantly, or?
No. The worst thing for me, I got out the ring and went back, and eventually I looked at my phone and I had something like 3,000, like mentioned stuff on me, and I was thinking, wow. And it was only when Mia ripped in a fight. Yeah. I was in a fight and got a clash of heads, and Mia started swelling. And then I carried on fighting, obviously, and I didn't know how bad it was. And then in round 9, Mia ripped. And sort of like when I got out the ring, I just walked down, went in an ambulance, went to the hospital and stuff, and he stitched it back together. That sort of went viral. I was getting mentions, and it was all like Mexican people, and it was all foreign writing and stuff. A lot of them,
yeah.
I couldn't even read it, but that was probably the biggest thing what happened to me. And say it's like, you know, mad stuff in the ring where it absolutely went viral, yeah.
So could you not feel that? Because I've seen the photos and it is. Yeah.
At the time, no, it's obviously you're full of adrenaline, you can't ever feel nothing. Like, I broke my hands in fights, and you know, like something's wrong here, you can feel something's wrong, but not like, you know, if I was to go whack, break my hand, now it'd kill me, you know what I mean? But in a ring, it's with the adrenaline, you don't really feel nothing. And I knew, I felt like in round 2, we went bang, a clashed heads, and I hear like bing, like a throbbing, and I thought, it's caught me here, there. And then, not another, get back to the corner, and my brother Paul was putting an ice pack on me at the end of every round as I'm getting spoken to. So I knew it must have been swelling, but nothing to what it was. And then again, round 9, comes in and like bang on the ear again. And I sort of seen the referee say time.
Yeah.
And I thought, they're going to have a look at me here. Yeah, I didn't know it was off. And then like I sort of walked and I looked down in the corner, and Joe's in the corner. Joe's like got his hands on his head like that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, wow, he never really shows out like that. Like, so it must be bad. So I looked up at the screen. It was in the Mandalay Bay in Vegas. So I remember looking up at the screen in the arena, and I could see Mia hanging off. And I was like, wow, how's this happened? I couldn't believe it. Shocked.
So did you just go straight to the hospital and then they sorted it out?
Walked back the corner, just couldn't get me out right. Like, wow, how's this happened to me again? Like, look, again, what I said, no, a bit of bad luck. I've never seen that happen in a ring.
Yeah.
Ever in my lifetime. And you know, I'm fighting in Vegas, and me is ripped off. Like, I've never seen it before, apart from Tyson biting Evander Holyfield's ear. I've never really seen that happen. I was like, wow, how's this happened to me? Just bad luck. And I'm standing in the corner, and like the doctor's like American, and he's like over the top going, hold still, man, your ear's going to fall off. It's just like nightmare. And I just got out the ring and walked down, straight in an ambulance, went like the hospital, and they were dead good, they stitched it, and you can't even hardly tell now, do you know what I mean? So I'm happy enough with it.
So did you ever sort of like, do you look back on that and then, you know, like sort of laugh, or were there many?
Yeah, now it's sort of been and gone. I can laugh about it, but at the time I was devastated, because it was just sort of, you know, you visualise your fight and you think of winning and you think of everything going right. And you know in your head things could go wrong and you could lose, and you know, I'm going to try my best not to lose, I want to win and everything. You never ever think, imagine something freaky happens, like me and hangs off. Like, I'd never even entered my mind. It was just like big shock, and it was upsetting, but it was just one of them. It's like, you know, you get setbacks in your life, you just bite down and keep going.
Does that sort of knock down your confidence?
No, because it wasn't sort of anything I'd done wrong. Like, you know, if I dropped my left hand and got it with a right hand and got knocked out, I'd be like, why did I do that? And get in the gym and I keep working on keeping my left up and stuff, but it was just sort of like freak accident, as I say. It was a clash of heads. He butted me in the ear in round 2, and then it's obviously swelled from then on, and I didn't know how bad it was. I can't see me, so
yeah.
I didn't really realise, but it was just sort of a freak injury, freak accident. Nothing I could have done any different. So no, it never bothered me from that day onwards. I've never sort of watched it back and wished I didn't do this or didn't do that. It's just one of them things.
Is there anything that you have sort of like gotten in your own head about, sort of like something's happened, maybe you've gotten like, you've taken a really hard punch, and like, it's because the way that I see it is that you get really stunned by it, something like that, if you really do catch something that's quite, you know, quite powerful. Have you ever sort of had one of those moments, and then it's been in, like, does it stick in your head for the rest of the fight, or?
No, you sort of like, you have a short memory when you're in the box, and you're in the ring, you sort of like, you forget about it, like you've being hit and shook to my boots, and you sort of just forget about it and move on. You think, oh, don't get it with that shot again. But you can't keep thinking about, oh, you can punch and you can hit me, because you'll end up losing. You wouldn't engage in your own stuff if you were too worried about him. So there's been times when I've been caught and thought, like, wow, like, I remember it in my first world title fight. I was fighting Jose Pedraza in Connecticut, and he wasn't a puncher. He wasn't known as a puncher, and yeah. I didn't think he could punch going in. I knew he was good, he was skillful, he could switch it, and he was tall, and I had a lot going on in my game plan, a lot of things I had to try and do. I remember the end of round two, he hit me like a straight right hand. It was just right on the end of it. It was right on the tip of the chin.
Yeah.
And just did a bing, and everything just like sort of shook in my head, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, wow, that was... And I just held him. Checked my legs were okay, because sometimes your legs are known to go and stuff, and I thought, nah, no, I'm okay. Yeah. I'm looking out the ring, and I could see my brothers, and I just like winked and said, I'm all right. But I knew it was a good shot, you know what I mean? And again, it was just like it happens, you forget about it and then you get on with it. And so I got on with the fight after that. Not unlike, he never hit me as hard as that again in the next the rest of the 12 rounds. But it was just sort of, I knew it was just a good shot. Sometimes you land them, sometimes you get hit by them. And it was one of them where I think the second time before for the world title in Monte Carlo for Jason Souza, and his last 14 wins were all by knockout. And I knew for a super featherweight to knock 14 out in the run, you must be able to punch. So it's a weird feeling getting in the ring, and I'm like, I'm waiting for him to hit me. I'm wanting him to hit me to sort of feel it.
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling, like I'm not letting him hit me, but I want him to. So I'm coming out and I'm boxing, and I remember him through like a left hoop right hand. The right hand hit me high on the head, and it was like a bomb. It was like bang.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, yeah, I thought, yeah, you can punch. But then you sort of forget about it then, and you get on with it then. It's like, now I've felt it, now let's go. And then I sort of got on with the fight, and it was a good long hard fight, and I lost him on points 12 rounds, but it was a tough like punishing fight, like give and take. It was probably one of the best fights I was involved in. The Souza one, it was a good tough fight, and you know I fell short at the end.
So you mentioned fighting in Monte Carlo. Is that, you know, what's the best place that you've ever fought in?
I don't know, I've fought some good places. Obviously, Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas has to stand out for me. Just, you know, to fight in Vegas was something else. Monte Carlo was probably a place, you know, I've never been. And I couldn't, it was probably like shocked me when I got there. I couldn't believe like the amount of money there. Like every car that drives past you is like a Lamborghini, a Ferrari, and you hear the engine, you turn, and it's a big Ferrari next year, and so much money there. It's like that was like an eye on place. But yeah, I'd have to say to fight at the Mandalay Bay in Vegas was something else.
Were you put in like a nice hotel and stuff?
Yeah, do you know what? At the time, like every time you go there and stuff, you sort of stay in the hotel you're fighting in usually. But when I got there, I was in the connect, like the Luxor connects onto it, so I had like a suite in the Luxor, lovely room, big brilliant room and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was actually in the next door, and I wondered why usually they put you in the Mandalay would have been, but there was the Moscone Cup, the pool, the way like pool competition. That was on in there, so I remember of a day I was going and watching that, sitting watching it, like my brothers were all sports fans anyway.
Yeah.
We were sitting watching the Moscone Cup, like it's like Britain against USA, isn't it? Like that, or Europe for USA, and we were going and watching the pool things in there. It was a good experience, like sitting getting to see that, because I've watched that on the telly for years, and then I was at that of a day, and then of a night I was going doing bits of training ready for me fight myself. So it was a good experience. Probably was the best place I've boxed.
So is that sort of like, what's the procedure like after a fight? Do you sort of stay there for a little bit longer? Have you ever opted to stay somewhere a little bit longer as well?
Usually, it's always sort of next day, fly home.
Yeah.
Back to reality type of thing. The one time, so I was boxing, it was the Vegas fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the Vegas fight. The one time I thought, nah, I know what I'm going to... I'm going to book a few days afterwards. I'm going to book my flight home a few days later. So I thought, my wife, we've been together for like 18 years. We've been together right through like my amateur career and everything. And I'm like, obviously in the amateurs, like when I won like the Commonwealth Games,
mm-hmm.
which was 15 years ago today, I'd like phone her and stuff, and I mean, she wouldn't be coming to them. But obviously throughout my pro career, she's always come to me fight, but she's never watched, she doesn't watch me fight.
Mm-hmm.
She goes outside while the fight's on.
Yeah.
So she travels to box, like New York, Monte Carlo, been some unbelievable places, but not like actually coming and watching me fight. So it doesn't really get to see none shit in the hotel.
Yeah.
So in the Vegas one, I thought, you know what, I'm going to book a few days and I've got to let her go and watch a show and stuff like that. So, look what happened. I ended up in hospital, didn't I, with me and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had a few days there. So went and watched the show and stuff. Went to see the Michael Jackson show and then going in, watched the show. Put a big, cast on me, yeah.
Yeah.
And when it comes out, there was, a big memorial of Michael Jackson. So it's a big queue to get pictures. Please get a picture. It's come on.
Yeah.
So gets in the queue, gets a picture with it. And as I'm there, a couple of Mexican people went, Smith, so next minute, they're getting pictures with me, pointing at me, yeah. And then there's been a queue of people to get pictures with me and a queue with Michael Jackson. And I was just I was hating it at the time because I just lost a meal. Yeah. It was in a big cast, but it was a mad, mad funny story looking back.
Is that the most that you've ever had? Do you sort of get stopped for autographs and photos now? Or?
Yeah, throughout my career, yeah. And especially with my brothers, I think. If anyone ever sees us together, then we'll get stopped quite a lot. But now in general, it's just at boxing events more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're already successful, you know. You've all just sort of gained success. I think you've all gotten you've taken the tips that you've all got to give to each other and, you know, taken it all on board. And you've used that sort of dynamic of being family and stuff to your advantage and, really made something out of it. I think it's really, really, it's interesting because I've never seen something like it, you know, because you're all, around the same age, competing at the same time and stuff. Did you ever did you ever make, many sacrifices to sort of go and see their fights and stuff like that?
Yeah, there's been times when... Sort of. I remember Paul was fighting Andre Ward in California somewhere. I don't know where it was, San Francisco.
Yeah.
I remember getting pictures San Francisco Bridge when we were there. So it was over that way. And Callum was fighting Christopher Brass the week later in the Echo Arena, took me up to Belia. I think he was, but it was definitely a brass. So for a WBC silver title, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So Callum couldn't come because of obviously jet lag and stuff, and it would have ruined his own fight. So we remember him staying home. So obviously when we went out for the Ward fight, he's had to sacrifice not seeing that. And Andre Ward's probably one of the best of our generation. He's an unbelievable fighter. And his brother's fighting him, and he's not able to watch it because of his own fight. So it's sort of sacrifices that, yeah, and There's been others and more where we've had to sort of wait around each other's, but that was one that always sticks in my head because I know how much he wanted to be there and couldn't and was obviously getting up in the night.
Mm, yeah.
4 or 5 in the morning over here when we were there, and he was waking up to watch it and then getting his head back down to obviously get his body clock back to normal.
Well, that's sort of that's a pretty extreme example, I guess. I mean, have you ever did you ever fall out and then decide, no, I'm not going to go and watch his fight or something like that?
No, not like that. Well, I say we're quite close. We don't really fall out.
Yeah.
We're competitive with each other in terms of everything outside of boxing, really. Anything and everything, we'll compete. We'll whether it be playing pool, snooker, anything, we compete with each other, but when it's boxing, we're more sort of supportive of each other. I think we're more understanding.
Yeah. You've got that sort of empathy because you're all...
Yeah.
You know what it's like. We're
going through the same thing. So
exactly,
And we know how important it is to each other as well.
So are any of you still fighting now? Or?
Yeah. Liam's fighting next out of us. He's fighting May the 8th in Russia. So that'll be the next one. Sort of... For us, next place where we go, so we're just trying to sort out being able to get there at the minute because of all this, the flight restrictions and that. That's a bit annoying.
Yeah.
So, obviously we can get that sorted, and then Callum lost his world title in December, it was December 19th to Canelo. But he got like a bad, I'm not even seeing his arm was like, he got like 3 muscle tears in the fight.
Yeah.
So he's have to obviously have to recover from that. So he's back training now. So hopefully, you know, he'll get back punching properly, and then he can make a day for his next one. And you know, Paul's done and retired, and at the minute with myself, I've just got back in training now. But yeah. I don't think I'll fight again myself.
Mm. Can you tell me about the rehabilitation process after something like that, like with the muscle tear or your ears?
Yeah, it just obviously it depends on the injury. You know, when it's 90% of them are always hand injuries being boxing. Yeah. You have to just obviously rest and recover and do what the physio tells you. But with this one, with him being like muscle tears in his arms, it was a bit unusual. You know, Canelo was like aiming for his arm, punching his arm. It was a bit of a mad one, but it worked for him. And you know, it was unbelievable tactics, but hats off to him, he pulled it off. And
yeah.
It was one of them where I think now since, it was just like, he got back and got scans on his arm, and they were like, you know, do you want to operate on, or the time it was, the Christmas period and stuff, they said it will heal.
Yeah.
You know, leave it, rest, do what they tell you to, and it will heal, it will get back to 100%. So he's rested, he's left it, and it's now 3 months on, and hopefully, you know, you'll see he's back training again now, so it should have made a full recovery.
What do you do to, like, because in that downtime, you can't just, can't just laze about or whatever, do you sort of keep the nutritional stuff going and, like, make sure that your body clock's on, you know? How do you sort of stay in shape while you're...
Well, obviously, we don't mind training, and we train all the time. If boxing was just about training, then we train all the time. It doesn't bother us. It's just sort of the hard part is the diet, and is the, you know, the nutritional side is the really... No difficult part. I think no one likes going to bed hungry, you know what I mean? And that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's enjoyed his rest. He's been very active, Callum, in his career. And then, you know, when he's got to number one in the world, it sort of slows up, you know, you don't get as many fights. But he's always in the gym, he's always training. So it's been good for him to have a bit of a rest, you know, spend time alone with his girl and his daughter. And, you know, he's enjoyed the rest, but he's chomping at the bit now to get back to.
Yeah, what sort of, like, you know, with everything going on the past year, what sort of opportunities has that presented you with, you know, to sort of, I guess, it's been a good time to reflect or even, like, rehabilitate or, like, recoup yourself, really, hasn't it? You know, there's nothing going on. What has, you know, what have you taken from everything that's been going on?
To be honest, yeah, with all this lockdown stuff and that, I think it's just been more, you know, family time, spending time at home with the kids and sort of like trying to keep them entertained as well as keeping them, you know, educated, you know, doing homeschooling and stuff. That's been a challenge in itself, more challenging than I imagined. I've got a newfound respect for teachers, put it that way, do you know what I mean? I think I didn't realise the patience you'd need to homeschool, but, you know, we've got through it like everyone else and I am glad to see them back to school or to get themselves back in the routine. I don't think it was good for anyone being at home all the time, and I think it's good for them to see them back in a good routine now.
Yeah, it's sort of getting back to normal now, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I think hopefully. I just don't want to speak too soon because you just don't know what's going on at the minute. You know, the government's full of surprises, but hopefully it's all behind us and we can get back to a bit of normal.
Yeah, do you sort of... do you think that you'd like your children to sort of go into boxing, or?
If you could tell me two lads that'd get into boxing and they'd learn all the discipline,
yeah.
You know, all the physical demands of boxing, if they go through a lot of it, but they wouldn't fight, I'd bite your hands off because
yeah.
I couldn't imagine how hard it'd be. You know, I find it hard watching my brothers. I couldn't imagine trying to watch my sons fight. I think it'd be a nightmare to watch, but... You know, you can't have the good without the bad, I suppose. So, you know, if you told me they'd grow up and they'd get into boxing, then I'd be happy for the discipline side of it. You know, the restraint it does give you. I'd be more than happy, but I wouldn't like to watch them fight.
No. Would you do the same that your wife did? Stay outside?
Yeah, so I'd have to be there. If they did choose to fight, I'd have to be there. I'd definitely be ringside, but I'd be a nervous wreck, but... So, you know, back to the question, I'd like them not, I'd like it if they didn't have a box.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think if I'm advising other people, I think it's a good sport to get into. It does teach you a lot of good discipline. The training's second to none.
Yeah.
I think, you know, physically it's so good for you, mentally it's so good for you, and you know, the discipline you learn from it, it is really, really good. But just the fighting side of it's so nerve-wracking to watch.
Yeah, what do you think, like, the amateur sort of scene, how does it differentiate from something like football? Like, what kind of support do you get?
Amateur boxing is unbelievable. Some of the best memories of my life. You know, I've met some of the most unbelievable people in amateur boxing, and I always look back so fondly of my amateur career, because it's just so different in terms of, it's for the love of the sport. It's, you know, you're travelling the world for a medal. You're trying your best to win a gold medal, and that's it. Basically, all you're doing, you're taking it home to your mum and saying, like, yeah, I've won. And we used to always give our medals to my mum. Like, you know, we laugh. Paul won a Commonwealth silver in Manchester. I got a gold in Melbourne.
Mm.
And Callum got a silver in Delhi. And the three medals are all still in my mum's house. You know, we come home, we'll give it to my mum. We won them living there, so they sort of stay there. And it's a little like ongoing joke we have there, my mum's medals, and it was just one of them. The love of the sport is amateur boxing, and you travel the world as a team and stuff, and it's a lot more enjoyable, whereas professional boxing becomes a business. It's a lot more money orientated, where it's about like selling tickets, earning money for a promoter, and, you know, fighting for the wage, you know, negotiating your wage and whatever money you're getting for the fight, and then moving onwards. Yeah, you know, you want to be world champion, you're aiming for the belt, and that's what secures you, but it's very money driven, and it's not as enjoyable.
So sort of, how do you get into amateur boxing? Like, do you get picked up at like a, I don't know, like sort of at a gym? Like, do you take the same coach that you started with, you know, as a child?
You go into your local, you know, there's local amateur boxing clubs all around the country, you know, all around Britain. And if it's something you're interested in, go into your local boxing club, tell them you want to box, and the amateur coaches there will learn you, you know, teach you literally from scratch. You stand to run guard and stuff, and then go on from there and build.
Yeah.
And if it's something you enjoy doing, then, you know, once you learn to, you pass your medicals and stuff, and then you box, and then once you start competing, you can enter championships and stuff then, and then it just depends how far you go. It snowballs from there.
Yeah.
You know, you only get picked up internationally when basically you're in championships, and you'll have like GB coaches there who'll see you, and then they'll send you a letter to say we want to make you a part of GB. That's how it sort of progresses. But first things first, you've got to go into your local gym and say it's something you want to do.
Yeah. So where do you start sort of boxing? What's the first thing that you need to learn?
Yeah, you've got to learn how to, basically what's called your stance and guard. You've got to learn how to stand, how to hold yourself. And once you get it all correct, then you learn to move.
Yeah.
You know, you do everything basic, literally step forward, step back, step left, step right, and you learn the basics, you know, religiously. You've got to go over them and over them and over them before, you know, you should be in a gym months before you're in the ring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you ever go in a gym and they've got you in the ring sparring within your first month or whatever, then you may as well leave. It's not a proper gym. You should be taught from the ground up constantly, and you should know how to box before you get put in the ring.
So, sort of like, can you remember your first fight as like an amateur? What did it feel like?
It was just, for me, at the time, like I say, I was always boxing in the house. Me and my brothers sparred in the house all the time. So it was like a long time coming for me. And then when I eventually got there, I never had the nerves or nothing. I was single walking the ring. I couldn't wait for it to happen. I got in.
Yeah.
I boxed a kid from Bury, and I won. Buzzing, got out, got my trophy, and I was made of going home with a trophy, you know what I mean, and showing my mum. And it was just like unbelievable. It was a long time coming, but it was a great feeling. And then when you start off, you think, oh, I'm never going to lose. You think you're the best thing in the world and stuff, and you sort of learn amateur boxing. You know, no one goes through amateur boxing without losing. It's just one of them things. You just got to keep learning and keep progressing, and that's what I learned soon, very soon.
Yeah. How old were you at that fight?
I was 11 when I had my first bout. You weren't allowed to box till you were 11. Then I think you can box at 10 now, but it was 11 when I started. And I had my first fight. The season starts like September. I had my first fight in the November.
So what do you think's like a good age to get into like the training and stuff?
If you start training, I think, you know, once you get to like 9, I think go to a gym and start training. whether you end up being a boxer or you don't, it's good. The training is second to none. I've said it before. I think the training, you won't get better training than boxing training. It's more physically demanding all round than anything, I think myself, because once you get to a level, obviously, if you're competing, you've got to sort of, it's weight managed, fair enough. But even just in general, you know, you've got to do your boxing training, your conditioning, your running. You've got all round aspect of it, and I think it's good to be involved in anyway.
Do you think that it's sort of like the best amateur or like the best sport to get into for that sort of training? Do you think that, because I read a lot of stories about in like football academies and stuff like that, a lot of children get left behind. Do you think that mentality is the same in boxing or?
Yeah, I think it's a lot more clear cut in boxing, basically, in terms of if you're fighting and you're winning, then you'll keep progressing. Whereas in football, you know, you can play for the team that wins every game in the league and you might not get picked up because there's better players in your team. So it's different. It's a different mentality and it's a different way to look at. So I can't comment. As I say, my son plays football now and he's a good little player and he's only eight, but he's already been like playing at like Liverpool, Everton, Man City and Wigan and stuff like that. And he really enjoys it. But with having my own background, my own experience in sport, I'm sort of good for him in terms of, I know not to let him get his hopes built up. I know he doesn't ever think he's playing for anyone. He just thinks he's going out for a game of football. He never knows the seriousness. I've never ever said to him, like, you've got to play good today, you're going to Man City or whatever like that. I just give him his boot and say, Frankie, go on, enjoy yourself. And he just goes out and enjoys himself, and that's all it's about. I don't think the seriousness should come into it until you're older anyway. I think it should be seen as what it is, which is just a sport. It's for enjoyment and that's it. And I think too many people put too much pressure on young kids at football matches. I mean, the thing I've seen already, as I say, Frankie's only eight, and the things I've seen at football already with parents shouting at the kids and stuff, it's just wrong. It's so wrong. You can't put pressure on a kid like that.
Do you think that a lot of the pressure, do you reckon that's like good for character building or?
To an extent, of course it is. I mean, things going wrong, everyone will tell you, you know, they've learnt more lessons in their life from things going wrong than things going right. You know, no one learns from winning, really. You know, it's the same in boxing. You can win 20 fights on a run. You might never watch them back. You might watch them back. You don't watch them back to learn. You watch them back to see how well you've done.
Yeah.
Whereas you'll have that one loss and then you'll go and watch it. You'll watch it again. You'll see what you've done wrong and you learn so many lessons from losing. It's the same in life when things go wrong, whether it be a football trial, whether it be a bad game on a football pitch or whether it be something you've done day to day in the house. If something goes wrong, it sticks in your mind and it makes you learn from it.
Yeah.
So because no one, you know, everyone makes mistakes in life, but no one makes the same mistake twice, so no one likes making the same mistake twice. So it's sort of just life lessons where things going wrong sometimes can be the best thing that's ever happened to you.
Is that the sort of mantra that you live by or?
Yeah, no, I don't sort of live by. It's just sort of, I always got told as a kid, you only get out what you put in. And that always made me work hard and always made me give up my heart because I used to want everything back. And it's just sort of, I think, you know, as you're growing up, you do sort of learn under experience and you learn from your parents and how you're brought up. But, you know, it should be a sort of in everyone, anyone who makes a mistake. They shouldn't make the same mistake twice anyway, just, you know, for your own mentality.
So, sort of like when you were a child, do you think that you used like your skills in boxing and things like that as like a teenager or something? Do you think that a lot of them go into, you know, a lot of teenagers and children go into boxing and then they use those skills like in a bad, you know, like sort of manner or?
It can be, but I think the discipline you sort of learn from it.
Yeah.
Like the hard thing what I say to people, when people say like, oh, you know, you learn a lot of discipline in boxing.
Yeah.
You don't go there and get like manners drummed into you and stuff like that. It's not that, but the only way I can explain it to someone is, you know, if you've got a young kid, he's a little bit of a tearaway, he's a little bit hard work for his mum and dad, and you put him into boxing, he's going to be in a ring, and a kid will punch him straight in the end of his, get it in the end of his nose, and then the coach will go, time, and he's got to touch gloves and shake hands and walk back the corner, and having that self-restraint, everything in you, someone's punched you, everything in you wants to hit him back, and because I've said time, you've got to touch his glove and shake hands and walk back to your corner, and having that restraint in yourself to not lash out, it does help them when you get back home and your mum and dad tell you no. You sort of can take it on board and listen first rather than just reacting and flipping out all the time. And I think that's where the discipline side comes into it, where I do think it's really good for kids.
Yeah, so you reckon that, because there's a lot of violence among, like, you know, the youth and stuff like that, isn't there? Do you think that a lot of boxers, you know, they're sort of like, do you reckon they're less likely to sort of lash out at someone or something like that?
Yeah, they've got a lot more restraint in them, because day to day, just living and doing boxing, they sort of, you know, they abide by rules. It's a real governed sport, and they know what they can and can't do. So they're a lot less likely to be involved in it and like that and lashing out, in my opinion, on the streets. I mean, the thing with the streets nowadays is all these kids with knives and weapons and stuff. You know, you'd never get a boxer like that. You know, a boxer walks the streets knowing he can, if he needs to, he can handle himself, and he doesn't have to do it. And you're very, very rare, I imagine, you'd get a boxer walking around carrying weapons.
Did you ever, like, sort of know anyone that carried a weapon or anything like that? Or?
No, you know, I didn't really mix in them circles, as I say. I was just gyming home and sort of, you know, myself and my brothers always sort of grew up at a good level boxing. You know, I boxed for England on my 13th birthday in Moscow, so it was always sort of important for me, do you know what I mean? I was always sort of travelling the world boxing. So I was never sort of spending a lot of time on the streets and in the wrong circles. It was probably good for my upbringing.
So did you ever sort of, like... Like, what would you say to people that do feel like they have to carry around that sort of stuff?
Just don't. It's stupid. You know what I mean? You don't have to. You just don't have to be... You know, you see a situation arising where you think something like that's happening, just walk away. Just don't get involved. You don't have to. You know what I mean? There's things going on all around the world. It doesn't mean you have to get involved in it.
Yeah. Right, well, so, thank you for chatting with me. I've got one more thing to ask you, though, which I do ask everyone. What is your favourite memory from boxing? Like, if you were to pick one sort of thing that you just look back on and you think, yeah, that was great, what would it be?
It was just one. I'd say probably when I won the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
Only because, I mean, like, thinking of my family back home, it was the only time that sort of my brothers weren't there, because it was in the amateurs and it was the other side of the world. I said, we're always together, me and my brothers, and none of them were there for that.
Yeah.
My dad flew out to watch it, but other than that, my mum and my brothers were all at home. And I remember, like, getting on the podium and I'm waiting and saying, and the gold medalist from England. And I remember standing there and I was doing a little thing to my hand, and I was doing it to my brother at home, to Callum. Because I was like, I just have a little laughing joke to me, throw it to a little thing to my hand. And I was thinking of them, waiting to get on, thinking, wow, like, I wish they were here, but I was sort of like doing a little signal to them. So yeah, it was probably a happy, happy memory for me.
What was going through your head, like, sort of on the podium? Were you thinking of them, or?
Yeah, of course, thinking of my family at home, just like, remember being on a podium, stuff like that, the proud stuff. I was thinking of my mum, thinking, like, nah, she'd be proud. Yeah. My mum watched the medal ceremony, she'll have been out the room. You know, a family would have been watching the fight and saying he's won. And the minute I've won, she'll have come in, watched the decision, and she'll have loved watching the medal ceremony. So probably thinking of my mum more than anyone on the podium. But yeah, thinking of my family at home, you know, my girl, my brothers, my mum, they were all going through my mind as I was about to get on the podium. Just thinking, like, now I've done it. Now this is what all my training has been for.
Yeah.
This is like why I've travelled the length of the world to get here. And just a sense of, like, relief and achievement, you know what I mean? So it was a proper happy moment, but more that sticks in my head just because my family were all the other side of the world. It was just one of them, and they were getting up at like 3 a.m. to watch me, and that's the way the time difference was.
Wow. I mean, that seems like quite a fantastic experience, to be quite honest, even to just be there and for your dad to be there. Did you go and see him straight after, or?
Yeah, my wife running over, I couldn't, like, get too much of seeing him after it, but it's all, like, confined off, and he obviously couldn't come in the back, so I seen him, I waved to him, and I knew he was proud, he was made up. But the experience in itself, sort of, when you go, you travel to boxing tournaments, or boxed in, like, all over the world, and when you go to the, like, boxing tournaments as usual, it's just sort of like hotels, and you can see boxers skipping and losing weight in the corridors and all that. And thing about the Commonwealth Games, it made it so different, was like, it was a multi-sport event, obviously. So I'm in an athlete's village, with, like, weightlifters one side of me, and I think it was like a netball team the other, like hockey team, and we're all in, like, different like apartments and houses on like a big estate there, and there was like a big massive like food hall it was, and it was the way I can describe it, was like a big sort of supermarket, and basically everything in there was free. You just walk in, you can just eat, drink whatever you want, take bottles of like Lucozade or Gatorade, whatever it was. You can take anything you want and go. Basically, it's just for the athletes. It's just a big food hall.
So what sort of, like, you know, when you're there, like in the athletes' village and stuff like that, what sort of an atmosphere is it? Is it all very communal or?
Yeah, because you know what? Obviously, like we were Team England, so we had our own like part of the village, and everyone's just happy. Everyone's happy to be there. Everyone's sort of like, you know, they've all gone through the selection process, so everyone's been trying their best to get selected, going through their own championships, their own, you know, competing in their own events, and then they've been selected and they're finally there. And I think you can see everyone's happy to be there. Everyone's walking around, and you know, they're all focused on their own events and their own things. And that's another thing, you know. The Commonwealth Games is over the course of however many weeks. Mm-hmm. It's like a couple of weeks, the start to finish, the opening ceremony to the closing ceremony. So we're all in the opening ceremony. Then you might have, say, for example, the weightlifting events are all over the first 3 days. So they'll have had the gold medal, and then they're going out and drinking and stuff and coming home late. And, you know, we're boxing from the first day right to the last. So it was difficult in that way as well, where you've got people going having nights out and coming in, and you're waking up to the noise and then thinking, oh, who's that? No, like, that's hard because you've got to take other athletes into consideration and stuff, you know what I mean? Especially if you go out the tournament, you've got to think of other boxers who are still in it and stuff. Yeah. But that was the biggest eye-opener for me, sort of being around the other athletes, because you don't really get to do that many times. It's only sort of Commonwealths and like Olympics where you sort of see that type of thing.
Yeah, everyone's like together.
Yeah.
I mean, does that make it like, does that have an effect on you, people going out drinking and you see them, or have you got...
Sort of, it's different because obviously you don't want to be out, so you're happy you're still in and you're still competing.
Yeah.
But it's hard when you know, you're really hungry and you're dieting and you're cutting weight.
Yeah.
And you've got a man sitting next to you who's got like 3 plates of food and he's just eating away and you're like, oh, it's hard, but you know, it's sacrifice, it's what you've got to do.
Wow, Dominic. I mean, that's what it's all about, sacrificing, self-control. Yeah. Resilience, or?
It's all dedication. I think you've got to show resilience in everything you do, whether it be the competing or the weight making, but you know, it's where your dedication comes into play.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us those words. Thank you for joining me. And I guess that's a good point to end it, you know, sort of reflecting on what good values there are. I mean, like you said, apply all of those to different walks of life, can't you? So
yeah, definitely.
But anyway, thank you for coming in and joining me on the Sports Champions podcast, and we'll see you all later.